Okay. Well, let's see. 9:04 a.m. It's August 5th, 2024. We can open the meeting and take roll call. Lee Wells, not here. Sherry Vaughn, not here. Bill?
Yep, I'm here.
Bill's here. Jerry Kolke, not here. Randy Laufer?
Here.
Okay, Randy's here. We don't have Justin O'Day. Also in attendance, I'm Justin Kalel, and we have Chris Walker, Kevin Tyler, and we have Daniel Miles, Alyssa Hebron, and John Wilson. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So we cannot vote to approve the minutes from the previous meeting, since we do not have a quorum. But we could look at them, I guess. I don't know. Or is there any point? We can skip it, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So I will provide some brief updates on our program and pass out these pictures to you guys. We have pictures of our new fair display and our setup at the Clark County Fair. And then also, I just have a picture in there to show the garlic mustard seeds are mature and viable now. So next will be some finds, maybe a find or two for garlic mustard. But I'll start off with the Clark County Fair. So far, it's been pretty good. As far as the fair goes, the display is working out great. That display we put together has all of our staff name and position and a brief description of what we do in our job. And it's really, really helpful to refer to that and kind of give people a sense of the scale of how many employees we have. And if I show them that the nasty letter you got is a nasty letter, for sure, but it came from these nice people who have faces and names, and you know, it personalizes us, so it's good. And then when we get the odd question about, you know, well, how come you haven't sent a letter to my neighbor over here? He's back on this, you know, private road over that direction. And we go, okay, yeah, we'd love to do that. But just so you know, this is John, and this is Daniel, and this is me. And we've divided it up between the three of us, so the entire county, including the city limits and everything, you know, it helps to point to the people and their faces and, you know, show the people. Yeah, it's the three of us. And we're training Alyssa right now, too. So she's the new field technician who we've hired. And eventually, she can be in the North District, as we have everything that's pretty much north of the East Fork, is how we kind of divide it. But you know, we're still in that process, so we're doing the training process and also everything else going on at the same time. But the fair's gone well. I have had fewer people so far that I've run into who have been really irate, and that's kind of honestly surprising to me, because the tansy has been the worst in 4 or 5 years, I would say.
It's really coming out this year.
Yeah, we really hit a wave. I believe it's been how hot it's been early on in the year seems to have flushed a big wave of germination, and the state routes look terrible. So drive an I-5 when you get about to the Ridgefield exit. It just, ooh, that's, yeah, quite bad.
That comes up most of the time with people that have it. Well, what about the county and what about the state?
Yep. And so that's another thing. We totaled up the amount of tansy ragwort we have pulled off the county roads. It came out to 5,675 pounds. And so that's one of the things that we have ready to go.
That's county roads.
County roads, yep. So that's the flower heads. We have been weighing the flower heads and, you know, pull the whole plant if we can. And if the ground is too hard to pull it, then we're, you know, chopping it down as low as we can with a machete. And bagging up the flower heads, yeah. So that's extraordinarily respectable effort. That's very, very good. I mean, there's lots to pull, obviously. But our crew's been working very hard. So, yeah, pointing to that board of 18 people and saying, there you go. You know, this is all the people we have to pull from. And they have to handle the entire county, all the parks and all the roads. And
I got one field just down from me, and it used to be timber, and they cut it all about 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's really came in this year.
Oh, boy.
They haven't done nothing with it.
You know, in
they
timber,
can't mow it because there's stumps there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, you talk about the seedling release, you know, in timber. Well, they release the seedlings all right, all the tansy. Yeah.
I'm hoping some of my trees get up big enough way up on top so it shades them out.
Shades it out, yeah.
Yeah. That wow. And the blackberries.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I've seen very few cinnabar moths this year.
Now, is it woodland groundsel or is it actually tansy ragwort?
Tansy.
Okay, yeah. Because sometimes we find that it's a lot of woodland groundsel moves in, especially after, you know, thinning or actually clear cut. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
He's got cows in there now, so.
Huh. That's
there's a lot of blackberries, but I didn't notice tansies last year, but this year they're a lot.
Yeah.
Of course, once you see that yellow flower out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many acres?
Oh, that must be 10, 15.
Oh, okay.
So it's not overly big, but yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah. Another guy talked to down towards Woodland. He said he's seen quite a few of the moths.
Yeah.
Oh, huh?
Yep. Just like always, they are locally abundant.
I've seen one plant on
abundant.
My place, and I turned around and went back just to check.
Yeah.
And usually, last year I had a lot of them. This year I don't have any.
Yeah. And when we find that they move around quite a bit, so you'll have a sizable population in one spot, but then, you know, other people
have not
found any.
Pokeweed.
Mm-hmm.
I had some in there before, but now I got a lot more. And
mm-hmm.
we sprayed last year, and it must be getting distributed by birds, maybe, because
yeah.
it's going down the ridge and
yep.
stuff. And
That's exactly it. Yeah. And we find that everywhere in Vancouver, but it is definitely moving with the birds.
I showed it to the neighbor, Rod Hazen, and he said he's got some this year now.
Yeah.
And he'd never seen it before.
And the roots can just get absolutely massive.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not familiar with it at all.
Well, okay. You can't pull it unless you got gloves on.
Oh yeah. I wouldn't pull it. I'll get it up for you, Bill.
It wasn't coming up a month ago because I've been taking people down through them trying to get it sprayed, and then 2 weeks ago I started noticing it sticking through the grass and stuff in
there
quite a few places.
Yeah, so it's actually a native plant.
Big blueberries on it.
Yeah, and they say that the Declaration of Independence was written with pokeweed berry ink.
Those are supposed to be pretty poisonous.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I'm waiting for, you know, they look, those berries look just like huckleberries.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for somebody to, you know, you talk about them being poisonous, waiting for somebody to take and go, oh, wow, here's huckleberries, yeah. Well,
you mean the, Which huckleberries?
Well,
like the blue ones?
Wild huckleberry, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I've always found those
blue purple, you know,
a lot smaller. Those are like smaller than Tic Tacs, right?
What's that? Huckleberries?
Yeah.
Oh, they're they're, you know.
They're like small blueberries.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of the other kind. Yeah. There's several species of huckleberry. Yeah. Okay.
Anyhow.
Evergreen huckleberry have really, really small. But talking about the mountain.
The little red.
The mountain huckleberry that the bears go after. Okay. Yeah.
Dragonberries, huh?
I was just going to go down to the picture so you could see it. There we go. so there's a habit. It'll get about 8 feet tall.
Hmm.
And the stems are just as red as you please.
Yep.
Hmm. So it's very
strong. They sort of look like they got a little fur on them.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. And the leaves are pretty common.
And you're supposed to break out in a rash.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's quite toxic. The birds seem to love it, though. Yep. So
it's not poisonous to them.
Yeah, seeds are readily spread by birds. Mm-hmm.
Is it poisonous to goats?
I would imagine so, yeah. Yeah, because...
Because goats just... Yeah.
Yeah. So they put it on the monitor list.
It's not on the list, is it?
No. It's just on the monitor list. Yeah, so
I looked for it and I couldn't find it.
Yeah. It is native to southeastern North America. But yeah, it's quite toxic. It's actually being studied because of how toxic it is. They might be able to make cancer drugs or something out of it because it's a mitogen. Anyway, I tell everybody about it. You don't want to...
Blade.
Get that? Yeah, you don't want to get that on your skin or eat it or anything like that. So we find that everywhere. Okay. So if you guys have any questions about our fair booth, I kind of took another picture of a wider angle to kind of show you. We have a really unfortunate location this time around. I can pass the picture.
Oh, that's okay. Just get.
Yeah,
I see it. Yep.
And it's. Yeah, we're hemmed in on three sides now, so we really got sandwiched.
Are you in the main exhibition hall, or?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we are in the event center, but we have two neighboring booths that really, really have tall things, so you can't hardly see us at all.
Mm.
So I've talked to... Sam, I think his name was, and he said he was going to be taking over for next year of the management. He came around and introduced himself, and Ilya actually was the guy who brought up that we're in a really unfortunate location. He and I were just talking about that before Sam showed up, and so if possible, I would like to be either over by the plant sale people, because that's actually really helpful to talk to everybody who's already plant-minded. Right now, we're just next to the mattresses, so, I mean, not a lot of crossover.
Yeah.
Either that or CPU, Clark Public Utilities, that would be fine too, because they have a lot of environmental stuff out a lot of times, mostly at the Home and Garden Idea Fair in the spring. But yeah, plant sale would be ideal. And yeah, if you guys have any other questions about the Clark County Fair, I'd be happy to answer those. Otherwise, I'll just move right along. Anything for that?
Nope.
Okay. So garlic mustard, like the picture shows, it is now mature seeds and cracking open and dropping those seeds. So there'll be some fines probably very shortly that I'll have to write. But one thing that is pretty good is that the city of Camas has hired a contractor and has completed a lot of work. And of course, they have a lot more work to do. It's not like they can now sit back and rest easy. But stuff is getting done, so that's nice. And when people are citizens in Camas are reaching out to me now, the city of Camas employees are being a lot more responsive, and so I'm just kind of playing coordinator, you know. I just kind of bring everybody the contact information of the people that they need to talk to, and soon enough, the contractors are getting permission to enter the private property that they need to access to get to, you know, the backside of the Camas right-of-way.
Is Camas the largest area of it? Is
yes.
Primarily?
Yes. Salmon Creek has a sizable amount, too. And unfortunately, we are discovering more and more satellite locations. Seems like every year or every couple of years, there's a new spot. So most recently, it's popped up in Battleground. And we just keep finding other places. But again, Battleground, the city, did a pretty darn good job of getting out there when I talked to them about it. And so,
That's a seeds, though.
What's that?
It's seeds.
Yes, absolutely.
How are the seeds distributed? They're not like Canadian thistle where it blows.
No, it doesn't blow. These seeds are small enough, you can see them there, that they will stick in mud. And then on the deer trails, the deer have been spreading it a lot.
Oh.
And similarly, county employees could spread it if we're not doing the best job of brushing our boots. But we try to do a really good job of brushing our boots every time we
It'll
go
stick
through
to
an
your pants and stuff?
Not so much like the Velcro seeds that you have on wild carrot or something like that. It's mostly just that they're so small that they'll get stuck in the cracks of your boot. And then, like I say, the mud. Yeah, all along deer trails, that's where we find it. But, you know, it washes downstream, you know, all through Washougal and Camas, you know, the Washougal River down to the mouth has quite a riparian corridor there where flooding events will move these seeds just everywhere. So that's the primary ways that it spreads. Yeah. So when it does pop up in satellite locations, we have one that we're still keeping an eye on. Winter Creek Road, is it? I think it's Winter Creek Road out in North County. And then there's a couple more, Vernon Road and another one that's, well, actually, all right along the East Fork. But like I say, we're keeping an eye on those and trying to get those stamped out. But garlic mustard is really, really good at being a weed. It's just, it's fantastic at doing this, making the seeds. So
isn't there a coal winter road along the East
Fork? Yeah. So garlic mustard, I think that's all I wanted to say about it. I am working with Camas to get them spraying again for it in the fall. That's going to be the next step because it's a biennial. And so as soon as we get out of the heat of the summer, you can spray it again in the fall time and start making some good headway. So yeah, we'll see how that pans out. But it's going in a good direction. And then poison hemlock has gone to seed pretty much completely. We were looking for stuff for the fair display, and there's just I haven't found any that's still in flower. The hot weather, it just went super early. But B&B investments that we were talking about.
Oh, okay, that's okay.
Earlier, yep. Their control work is still looking good. And so, yeah, they've been compliant, so that's nice.
Yeah, I actually recently visited that property.
Mm-hmm.
I found just one small plant hiding under a bush. Otherwise, everything's looking cooked. So,
Well, our challenge with them last year paid off. Huh?
That was a word.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good.
And then Tansy, obviously, is in full flower and looking terrible. A lot of places already gone to seed, but we did put out our Tansy ragwort signs, and people have noticed them because when I'm at the fair booth, they say, you know, you put out the Tansy ragwort signs, but your county roadsides look bad. And I say, well, we actually have pretty good coverage. I was talking with Dan, who's the other lead field inspector, and he was saying he feels very confident now that all the roads have had a strong first pass, at least, And we get waves and waves of germination, but we've had good coverage with our employees on the roadsides.
Didn't you use Larch Mountain before?
Yes, yeah. We did.
That's one thing I throw at them. I said, well, you don't have the crews anymore.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
And they were supposed to move them to Kelso, and they did not. They said they would build them a place down there, and once they got down there, nothing happened.
Mm. Yeah.
And they don't plan on it either.
Wow.
So I don't know where it was. I drove past someplace, and there was a couple of you guys out pulling tansy in the ditch banks and everything. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, boy, I'm glad I'm not out there doing that.
Yeah.
Once it gets to a yellow flower, if they mow it, it's still going to throw the seeds down.
Yeah, so we've noticed a couple of things with that. If you have a good hardy plant, it can absolutely bloom and set seed at 2 inches tall, even if you completely cut it. Now, to be honest, a lot of the brush hogs out there are not sharp, and they're knocking the plant over and maybe smacking it a couple of times, but they're not cutting it, and so it stands right back up again, you know, after they run over it with the tires or something. But there's quite a lot of tansy that, yes, produces seeds even after somebody has tried to mow it. And in the case of people who are pulling the plants, we talk to them about getting those into bags, because you can pull a plant and then just put it in a pile, and the plant will still use whatever moisture it had to complete the whole cycle and make viable seeds while it's out of the ground.
I was reading an article some woman put on Facebook, and I throw mine in the pile to burn.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that was a bad deal because it gets into the smoke, and the people get into the smoke, they can get it.
As far as the liver damage?
I don't know. She you cut the seeds off, put them in the bag,
a lot of experts
get them in the garbage somewhere so they're gone.
Don't play in smoke. I think that's the take-home message.
Yeah.
Don't play in smoke. I don't know.
I got a lot of them on my pile up there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty common to burn it, so I don't know. I guess this is the wrong way to look at it, but I would have thought by now you would have had stories of people having that happen if indeed it was horrible. Because you do have stories of people having poison oak. They burn that, and then, you know, if you're even close to the smoke and it blows over there, oh boy, yeah, you'll get the poison oak oils in the smoke, and that's what I'm saying, is I would have expected to have heard about that already.
I've only read that one article, and it was rather long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But at least you pull them and throw them on a pile to burn, they're doing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And if somebody has a tractor, then I tell them, you know, you could just dig a hole, you know, make it plenty deep and throw the tansy in the hole and mm-hmm. cover them over, because that doesn't take a lot of know-how, and you don't have to worry about bags and disposing and all that stuff if you want to make sure it doesn't spread. There's you know, lots of ways to get it done. As long as somebody's doing something about it, then that's the idea. But there is a whole lot of it. And when I talked to the guys at the state, we sent them data. Daniel had gone through the state routes and was using our quick capture button to record all the points. And so I sent that off, and then after the usual snafu of, oh, we don't know how to interpret your special files, once I just took a picture of it and I sent them the picture of, look, here's a thumbnail snapshot of the whole county, here's all the, you know, state routes. Then they kind of were shocked and appalled and said, oh no, I didn't like actually seeing all this, and I liked it better when we couldn't understand your file format. So they're aware. You know, Ray Willard is the head honcho for the state DOT, and he's aware. All the county guys are aware. They have different crews, so there's one that handles the stuff that's more North County. But they're all aware of it now. And I noticed mm-hmm. that DOT does a pretty good job when it comes to the early season stuff. Mm. But when they stop spraying, I don't know what's gone on with their mowing, but they haven't done a lot of roadside mowing that I have been able to notice.
That's a state or county?
State.
State. Mm.
Yeah.
The county state only route. Gets around my place once, usually.
Yeah. Well, I've seen zero times on the state routes, on the spots where they really need it, so.
And I don't know how you get a hold of them, because I tried to call, and it wouldn't go through.
Hmm. Well, I've got some contact information for a couple of...
Because at some of the roads I called a couple of years ago, they mowed it and that year. Now they haven't mowed it since then.
Right, yeah.
I told them I pay a lot of taxes. I want that mowed.
Yeah, and some of the roundabouts the cloverleaf, you know, the exit off-ramps are really bad this year. I-5, really bad. So... When I talked to them, they were saying that they did have people out that were trying to pull and bag it, and I don't know where they're doing that. I'm not seeing it. Hasn't made a dent yet. Same with the mowing. They said they were going to be out mowing, and I haven't seen it. I don't know what they're doing unless it's on 14. They have done some things on SR-14. But I-5.
Well, I will admit, as we have a real challenge talking to one of our neighbors too, he has the same thing, is trying to get part of our crew to do that. And this neighbor, older than I am, and he says, here he is, he's out there pulling and bagging this tansy because his crew won't touch it and stuff and won't do it. And they're just kind of like, well, we pick berries. We don't pull tansy, so.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
Well, it's not fun, and it's hot work, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another one we got out there a lot of is Queen Anne's Lace.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Is there something you can spray that with? I have a friend out there, he said, what can you spray that with?
Yeah, well, you can. Not right now. Not right now, because it won't do anything right now. But in the fall and the spring, then you can use broadleaf herbicides. But it really has to be in that bushy carrot phase, mm-hmm. where it's down along the ground.
I when sprayed a lot of mine like that last year. You can't tell nothing this year, so I just let it go.
Well, I think that between...
And it seems like they're in ditches.
Yeah.
You see in the field a little bit, but not much.
Yeah, I'll have to ask, because I remember there being a big difference between aminopyrrolid and triclopyr for wild carrot, but I don't remember which one was which. Mm-hmm. I know it kind of shrugs off one of them. Poison hemlock can shrug off milestone, I know that, but I think milestone is actually the preferred. John, do you remember, is milestone the preferred for wild carrot?
I believe so.
I think that it might be that it can shrug off triclopyr more than it can shrug off aminopyrrolid. But I've seen pretty good success with either one. It just has to be actively growing, and you have to get good coverage, you know. If it's up and flowering, you just have sticks and flowers to spray. There's no leaves. Yeah. It won't absorb anything. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're using, you know, good surfactant and doesn't get washed off and all that stuff, we've had good results. Yeah, just make sure you're, you know, using a good label rate, not half-hearted. Because wild carrot definitely is one of those that is a tougher customer than like poison hemlock or something.
I got a lot of pineapple weed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like a gravel
drive. One past your tent, it just, I mowed it, but I think I'm too late because it was flowered.
Yeah.
But it don't seem to be coming up. You don't see it in the spring, and then all of a sudden, here it comes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's another one that likes the hot weather. Because I see that sometimes. But that's the one that's super short, right?
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, pineapple weed or dog fennel. Yeah.
Mm.
Called the same. Yeah. Yep.
I had that Tim Holmey, is it?
No.
Does some spraying.
Yeah.
And he jumped out and took a picture of it because he wasn't sure what it was. And it told him it was pineapple weed.
Yeah. Well, that's one, once you figure it out, you'll never forget because it smells like
pineapple. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So it looks like little pineapples and it smells like pineapple. So once, you know, once you get that, then I don't want to call it any other
combining
name.
We would run into that. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. You just, you know, do everything you could to try and get through it before you, you know, before it smelled too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Want to have an enclosed cab or something, like seal it all up.
Well, even that, it comes
even
through.
And, oh,
whoa, gosh, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Of course, you know, it goes through the combine ground up and one thing and another and stuff. So, boy, it really sets off all that aroma and everything.
Yeah.
And then it stays with the combine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, yeah. Next time you have to go and clean out the sieves or something or other, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Yikes.
Yeah. So the question is, was it pineapple weed or is it dog fennel?
Well, dog fennel, the one that I know, the name is very different.
Well, it's just a little bit, it has to do with the the blossom or the bud.
Because, let's see.
Well, the daughter-in-law looked it up a couple years ago too, and she called it pineapple weed. Because I was calling it wild carrot back then.
Oh, okay.
Because it comes up, it sort of looks like a carrot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so dog fennel is much taller, as far as I knew it.
Okay.
Now, there might be some crossover, but yeah, the dog fennel that I knew is much, much, much taller. And it
really
kind of gets close to fennel, like fennel height.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
So if it's close to fennel height, then...
Because we always heard that dog fennel and okay, so...
See, but you're right. There are people who are calling mayweed, dog fennel,
mm-hmm.
and something else.
Right. Now,
here's one.
The difference we always heard was that pineapple weed does not have the flower, the petals around the blossom.
Yeah.
Or the bud.
Right.
The bud, yeah.
Yeah, so chamomile and dog fennel and pineapple weed, they look really close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you'll be excused and I'll be excused if we don't all get...
Yeah, right up
exactly
at the top there, that's what I'm seeing as dog fennel, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But you said that gets taller.
Yeah, it's much taller, yeah. So pineapple weed, I've only ever seen that.
A foot at the most.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, the dog fennel I'm used to is like that in the picture. It's just, you know, a foot tall is about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it makes things hard with common names because you get, like, this stuff. And this is called dog fennel as well.
That's so, about like... one of the periodicals had a contest one time. How many different names for quackgrass? And I think they came up with 21 different names for quackgrass, yeah, over across the nation, yeah.
Well, if it's going to smell like a pineapple and looks like a little pineapple, then just call it pineapple weed. Yikes. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Tansy's bad. So the variable leaf milfoil, I was able to complete the treatment for all 7 sites. I had some people who turned out to be real hesitant about herbicide treatment at the 11th hour. And that was, that was a challenge. But I kept talking with them and kept giving them specific information about, you know, here's exactly what the deal is with the herbicide and with the weeds and with, you know, state law and with everything else. And so eventually, I did get all 7 landowners to sign off on it. And it was very different from all the terrestrial work that I've ever done. And even with knotweed, it was very different from knotweed. And I expected that it would be pretty similar to knotweed, because you have You have something where you have to get permission from the landowner. You're doing this on private property. It's right near water, so, you know, about near water and in water. But no, no, very different. Everything changes when you use a boat every single time.
Hmm.
That's quite a thing. Having that trailer and going down the really long driveways that are just super, super thin with brush hitting the mirrors as I'm going through. And then trying to back up with the boat trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a big challenge. So
I was down at Gene Jones.
Yeah.
About a week ago, and a half ago. He's got 20 of those canisters out there now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been, you know, talking to him every once in a while, but...
But only two of them were functioning most of the year.
Yeah,
He thinks he gained ground right in there, but he said it's going to be next year before we do anything.
Yeah.
Because they were so late getting the electricity to the rest of them.
Yep, that's what it... Yeah. Yeah, utilities, so...
Sounded like he had a 440 down there, and they didn't know how to convert it back to 110.
Really?
And they finally got it converted, but he had two of them functioning right in front of his house.
Yeah.
And he said it looks like it's not a stick there.
Yeah.
Say it that way.
Well.
So what do these canisters say?
Yeah. So it's a company, I think they called it Regiro. And
it's a bacteria that grows on them.
Right. The idea is to tie up the
nutrients. Starve out the milfoil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not starve out everything else too.
Well, that's
yeah.
This is going to be a test.
Okay. Yeah, and so it seems like there's evidence on both sides. There's evidence that the bacteria can improve the smell and the look of the water and the clarity of the water, but there's also evidence that if you're talking about macrophytes, you know, other than algae, then no, they're going to still be pretty good at getting nutrients, even if they have to get it from dead bacteria, right? You can't keep all this bacteria alive forever, so it's going to die, and it's not going to, you know... The only permanent solution that I've ever actually heard of when you're talking about sequestering the nutrients is to be using something that chemically binds it permanently. And there's some things like that where they have kaolinite clay with I forget exactly which metal it is, but there's a metal atom inside the clay. And it might be potassium, I forget exactly which metal, but it binds to phosphorus permanently and doesn't really release it. You know, the chemical reaction pretty much just all goes that direction and never releases it. And then it's not biologically available. But in a bacteria, that's still a biological system, right? That's going to release it again. So I don't know if the idea is that when the bacteria die, they're going to form a sediment layer that the plants couldn't access, but it seems very hypothetical at this point, and I don't find a lot of peer-reviewed research articles that say, yes, absolutely, this is going to work. I see evidence on both sides. It's kind of anecdotal. So,
yeah. So after a while, if he doesn't kill it and keeps growing it, county's going to have to do something, and then shit's going to hit the wall.
Well, he's done a lot of work for it, but yeah, he's back at the original place, which is he's got a lot of plants, and some of them are Class A, and those need to be eradicated, so he can pull out all of the milfoil like he was doing, but we're still right back at...
Is it growing in the irrigation ditches?
I haven't seen it in the ditches. I've looked at Rock Creek, where it empties from his property, and in the water ski lake that's downstream from him. Haven't seen it there. But that one is heavily managed, you know, right? So that's, they are doing quite a bit to that. And the turbidity in that is so high that I wouldn't really expect much of anything to be, and that's what we saw when we looked at it. It's just not much of anything can grow there. So yeah, I think the bacteria would help if you were trying to control algae, you know, keep the algae down, or smells, bad smells. But as far as actual aquatic plants, no, I don't know. We'll see. I'd love to be wrong. yeah, but for the treatments that I did, the initial results look great. I was paddling around through it, and I could turn my paddle to just be like a knife and slice right through the milfoil like butter. And that's exactly what that herbicide does, is it just makes the milfoil shatter. So I'm looking forward to getting all of the after pictures complete, and then I can have before and after. Maybe some drone footage of the after treatment, and make a video out of some of them.
Are you going to have to treat this again?
Yeah, I've been talking with the people at Ecology and Department of Fish and Wildlife. The other infestations are much larger than these, but they have had to go back year after year. So in all likelihood, some of the bigger sites, we might need to. Yeah, we might need to. So like Sugawa Brothers Reservoir, possible. Yeah, possible that we would. But as far as the smaller ones, one of the smallest was 2/3 of an acre. And that's all. So, just a big pond. That one, I think, is probably going to be a one and done. Where, as long as it doesn't get reintroduced, and as long as we don't have a lot of germination from seeds, that's the other thing that could happen. There could be a lot of seeds in the sediment on the bottom. Just don't know. That's kind of a question mark at this point. But yeah, we'll see. I'm interested to know how effective it is long term. But in the short term, it looked great. And I've got lots of pictures of plants twisted up. And the first thing that the milfoil does is the part that's sticking up out of the water just falls back into the water. So you know that, yeah, it's definitely being affected.
So how long have they known this to be milfoil?
Who you're talking about?
Who discovered milfoil? Has it been around for years and years and years, or they just finally decided, oh, we're going to name this? And
oh, in Clark County? No, that was Gene Jones.
He was the first one?
Yeah, he was the first one. He called me out and said, hey, can you come out and do a survey and tell me all the different species of aquatic plants I have, because I want to stock triploid grass carp, and that's one of the things that I need to have to be able to do that. I said, sure. I came out and found a plant that I'd never seen before, and it was very odd. So I sent pictures of variable leaf milfoil to the state and said, this looks weird. Is this variable leaf milfoil or what? And they said, yeah, that's what it looks like. But it was only listed as a noxious weed in 2008. And it is native to the eastern United States. So in Washington, they've noticed it going crazy. And so they listed it as a noxious weed. And I believe it was 2020 or 2021 that I first found it in Gene Jones's property. And ever since then, it's been quite a saga of DNA tests and native plants. We did find some native milfoil that looks very close to this in or I didn't find it. Actually, it was Ecology that found it over in La Center area. So we have both. We have all three. We have the hybrid, this right here, Heterophyllum crossed with Hyperoides, and this is the native. And so, yeah, the hybrid, very belief milfoil, is also listed Class A. So, yeah, we've got all three in the county.
Is this what they're trying to find on these boat inspections, where they inspect boats coming in? That's something different.
No.
Quagga mussel.
Yeah, they're trying to find lots of things. But yeah, quagga mussels and zebra mussels are
once in a while they're
very close to the top.
Scales, they'll pull them in. The game department will set up.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that, they're looking for the mussels and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Those are at the top of the list. This is something that they want to get rid of with clean, drain, dry, and that procedure to stop invasive species from moving around. But the money is actually in the mussels. Yeah, that's what they have as their biggest mandate. So yeah, this took up a heck of a lot of my time, and especially just right in the summer. My whole July was pretty much used up. So I'll talk more about that later, but that was something I did not expect. I expected that it would be a little bit quicker than it was, but one thing and another thing, and it just treating each site took me a day, and I thought I'd be able to do, you know, two or three sites per day, and just didn't work out like that. So and then while we're on the subject of variable leaf milfoil, I just bring up that we have an EDRR, Early Detection Rapid Response Training, that we're going to provide to the public on variable leaf milfoil. And we have partners with the Pacific Northwest Invasive Plant Council and WCU Master Gardeners. And, I'll be talking, and we'll have folks from Ecology there too. To just kind of go over aquatic noxious weeds and the terrestrial stuff, and do some training to citizen scientists. And this one is going to be on, let's see, the 13th. Yeah, 13th is what it looks like. Let's see, 14th? Okay, well, I'll figure out my calendar. No, sorry, it's the 12th. Yeah, okay. So, let's see. Anyway, I'll figure it out. Then, I also wanted to talk about weed-free forage. Because all my time was taken up with this variable leaf milfoil, I had so little bandwidth left for pretty much anything else. And that was really unfortunate. This is one of those Class A noxious weed, has to be, you know, top priority sort of thing with the state laws. But moving forward, I would like to figure out a way to spread the bandwidth, right? You know, so that not every single thing is trying to happen at the exact same time of the year. But unfortunately, that's kind of the industry, right? It's all the weeds are happening in the summer, and that includes the aquatic ones. And then, yeah, weed-free forage is also right in that same time frame in the summer. So Lee's not here, but I'm sure that he was pretty frustrated with not getting the field certified. But like I say, you know, we're doing training, and also these other projects, and even just the normal field inspection stuff that we're doing. It's been super intense this year with how much we're writing the reports for Tansy. So
that place in Parker Lake where the blueberries are.
Yes.
And then on the far end, that guy does hay.
Mm-hmm.
Now every once in a while I'll see all kinds of flags out through there.
Mm-hmm.
Is he looking for weeds or what is he doing?
In the hay field?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I thought maybe he was going for the weed-free stuff and they were going out through there checking, but...
I don't know. Yeah. Well, it could be anything.
Whoever was doing the hay sold it to somebody else because they're getting old. And that guy says, well, I'll keep haying it. That's what they wanted. Well, right after he sold it, then they broke into lots. Oh. He was going to sell lots there.
Huh.
And something's came up because all those signs have came down now.
Oh.
It's down in the bottoms?
Yeah.
How?
Is it?
They said it won't perk, but there's a whole bunch of houses on that one side, and they're all on one septic system.
How? Again, I say how.
But
okay.
And I was trying to ask Gene what was going on over there. He was going to try to find out because I said they had lot signs up. I think he paid $450,000 for 25 acres or something. And then those lots he was going to sell for $400,000. So he was going to make a bunch of money. And all of a sudden they took signs down.
Is it west of the blueberry fields or how do you...
I would say it's west.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
It's towards the Fargo Lake Pond, the original.
Yeah. Wow.
And they've cut it twice so far this year. They'll probably cut it one more time.
Okay. No, yeah, I haven't been out there to hear.
Yeah, they'll have 50 to 100 flags out there, you know. And what is he doing? And you'll see two or three guys walking around once in a while. Looking for something.
Is it good, healthy peat soil, is it, or...
Yeah.
Or is it?
That's why he gets three cuttings off.
How could they build on that?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know?
Well, they've got that ski lake there.
Well, yeah, but that's, you know, that's a little different. I mean, you're not building a structure on it at all.
Well, I think he's got a house there, and then there's some houses on the edge over
there. Well, so
the
ski lake.
I heard they were all on one septic system.
Well, ski lake has a structure, but yeah, it didn't. You're talking about just east of the water itself?
Yeah.
Yeah. That, was that a house?
But then way north, they've got a couple down there, and to me it don't look like the elevation has changed that much.
Uh-huh. Yeah, wow.
Back towards Erickson's old place, they built in there. And then a lot of that, I think they sold to these companies for wetlands.
Yeah, well, that's what I would assume, is that if
I don't know how many times it's been sold as wetlands, but
yeah.
Every time somebody builds a highway, oh yeah, our wetlands out there,
right?
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Well, so I just wanted to bring that up because weed-free forage is something that. We do want to get to, but we don't have the capacity that we once had, and it's not likely to ever really get back to the capacity that we had.
Did you do any weed free forage this year at all?
Couldn't get to it at all. And that's the other thing that I wanted to bring up is just that you know, we have to be careful to not have only one person get it, and have it not be fair to everybody.
Right.
And as far as a system on, you know, who talks to me first or who has, you know, take a number, you know, a number out of a hat, I don't know. But, yeah, we do have to be careful that we're making whatever that would be fair. And
so we didn't have any it this year.
Yeah.
So if people around here are going to go to the National Forest with weed free, they're going to pay more yet because now it's going to come from somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah, and I've already had that question. People are asking me for our list, and so I refer them to the list of, you know, who has produced it, and Some of our producers don't really sell commercially, or they sell to just one person who didn't even care that it was weed free or not. But you're right, you know. We get a lot of inquiry over the years about the gravel too. And I just, you know, that's not one that I want to take on. So, in the future, I will be keeping a close eye on trying to, like I say, spread things out as much as I can, and I'll try to do the very belief milfoil treatments if I do have more to do earlier in the year, and just get everything lined up. But I had people who were pretty late in the game as far as changing their minds and stuff. But yeah, like I say, I'll try to nail that all down. And we are training, you know, John and Daniel and I now all have the actual certification to do the weed free. But yeah.
That milfoil has a definite timeline when you need to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one where if I do it too much later and there's a lot of plant mass, then I have to increase the rate of herbicide that I use. And maybe not get as good a control. So yeah, it definitely has a sweet spot for the timing window.
Yeah. I'll throw one thing out on the just of interest is peat bog. It's technically not soil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And you know, everybody wants to say, well, oh, gosh, it's good black dirt. And technically, if you're working it, it's not soil. And so a lot of your herbicides, like when we farmed 80 acres of it, and, boy, I'll tell you what, you're trying to find a dang herbicide that would work because the organic matter just ties everything up so quick and everything that we had just horrible weed problems with it. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you mean for pre-emergent?
Yeah. Like sweet corn or anything is you know, using atrazine or stuff, and it would tie it up pretty fast.
Wow.
Yeah. So you had to try and use a foliar application of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyhow, just yeah.
Yeah, and okay. then building on peat.
So when we farmed, you know, this piece of ground, there was a road went through one side of it.
Right.
And you could stand out there, and when the big dump trucks would come through, you could just feel it shake and everything and stuff and all. It was just like standing on you know, jello and everything.
Being on a, like a waterbed.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. So I drove for Harold Erickson one time years ago, you know, mint truck. And when they signaled that you were full, you know, you were to take off and go just as fast as you could because they didn't want to sink. And I remember one time I'm just bombing for everything I'm worth, and I look out the side and you can see the wake as I'm going along.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny stuff. It's funny stuff to work with. Yeah, so.
How deep does it go?
We have very shallow peat here. Now, if you go back to Ireland and like that, it's very deep.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, now, I don't know about Farger Lake, but where I was down in the Bridge Creek bottoms, that was all scoured out with the Missoula floods.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's only, oh, most of the time, it's only 6 to 10 feet deep or whatever, mm-hmm. if it's that and everything. But they talk about going back to Ireland and you know, cutting the peat and stuff, and my gosh, it'll be 40 feet or more deep and stuff. Yeah. And then take and cut it and burn it and stuff. So So
we didn't get any public comment submitted with email. It doesn't seem like anybody is here from the public to attend our meeting. Did you guys have anything else that you wanted to get updates from me?
Well, I think we covered so much other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Do we have anything else to go to the order?
You were saying you were going to send some fines out.
Yeah.
So we might have a meeting later on those, or?
Well, we will definitely have a special meeting, which we need to schedule, because we do have an appeal to hear for one of the fines I've already written. And then, well, it's actually the only fine I've already written. And then.
Was it for tansy or hemlock?
It's for slender flower thistle.
One for one, then.
Yep. Yeah. It's for slender flower thistle. And.
Okay, bring up slender flower thistle.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yep. This is one that's a Class A noxious weed. And I wish this would be native, but it is not very abundant. We have about 30 or so sites in all of Clark County. And so,
can you show a bigger plant?
Oh yeah, absolutely. This one looks a lot like Canada thistle, except that all along the stems, you have a fin that sticks off, kind of like a continuous leaf. And you'll notice all of the flowers are at the very tip, and you don't have a lot of branching coming off like you would with Canada thistle. Here's a better picture.
Fin, yeah.
Yeah, here's a better picture of the fin. And then also of the flower heads. True to its name, the flower heads are pretty thin, and the seeds have the pappus, the little umbrella that helps them parachute, that helps them fly around. So when these get going and flying around, then, well, that's an excellent picture of the fin, then you can really get one neighbor angry at another neighbor. That only spreads by seeds, so.
Whereabouts do you find it?
Ridgefield.
Huh?
Yeah, just south of the Ridgefield proper.
Oh.
Yeah, we have.
So it does not spread like Canadian thistle by rhizomes or anything and stuff. It's just.
You're correct. It does not spread that way. But it responds well to herbicide. It's not something that's as hard to kill as Canada thistle. It's about like bull thistle as far as you want to try to kill it, and you can. It goes to seed earlier than lots of things, and it can go to seed 2 times a year or more. We've found that there are some of them that can be exceptionally small. Lots of it, you'll see that's, you know, 2, 3, even 4 feet tall, but also, we found them that are very, very, very small, like 4 inches, and still going to seed. So this is one that I've been working with landowners, and we have some people who are doing a better job of this. And I've been in close contact, and they've been doing better over the years. The site that I sent a fine to was doing great, and then was sold. And as soon as the dairy farm was sold to a developer, hasn't been doing a good job. So obviously we'll go over that at the appeal meeting, but that's the species that we've done so far. And the fines that I will be writing are going to be for garlic mustard and possibly for milk thistle, because we have some more situations where people are starting to dodge us and just not talk to us anymore. So gotta get their attention somehow.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, anything else? Okay. Well, hearing nothing else, we can go ahead and close the meeting then.
Okay. You don't have a date for that appeal then?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
No.